Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope that you and your family and your friends are all staying healthy. We are happy to have you join us here today. Hey, a date that you might want to kind of keep in mind this week, something you might want to put in the back of your mind. Tomorrow, May 21st, is National Waitstaff Day. Now, National Waitstaff Day is observed each year on May 21st, and the day was created to show appreciation to and thank all waitstaff for making our dining experiences enjoyable ones. And at the same time, I mean, restaurant owners and restaurant managers, they can also recognize and express their appreciation to their team of waitstaff who do their best to keep restaurants going. So maybe tomorrow on May 21st on National Waitstaff Day, I don't know, maybe you think about not cooking. Maybe you think about ordering some carryout, since in a lot of places that's all we can do right now, and you make sure that you take care of that waitstaff, you tip that waitstaff. Hey, they have to deal with a lot of nonsense. And you know, even in this time, they're having to deal with a ton of nonsense. They're having to deal with all the Karens of the world complaining about one too many ice cubes in their Perrier. And in fact, you know, while we're on this subject, not just waitstaff people, let's all be sure right now in this kind of weird time, can we just be sure we're all being nice to the people that are out there working on the front lines, that we're saying thank you, that we're smiling, that we're saying hello, that we're just being nice to all the people that are out there working in these weird times. I mean, the grocery store checkers, the postal workers, the delivery drivers, the bank tellers, and of course, all the medical personnel that are having to be out there actually treating people. Make sure you are saying thank you. Make sure you're, you know, being nice to those people. And I know I don't have to tell my Daily Dose listeners that because I have smart listeners. Maybe just kind of spread the word to the other people though, because I think in this time with the high stress, with kind of the high anxiety, I think there's a lot of people that they just lash out at whoever is in front of them. And I think we need to make sure that we are being nice to those people that are out there working, that are out there kind of putting their lives out there right now. Hey, we appreciate their work. We thank them for the jobs that they do and the fact that they're putting their health on the line every single day. To all of those workers out there, wait staff, you know, some of the other people we talked about out there working, stay healthy, stay strong, and remember this one very important thing.
You're the real MVP.
Hey, if you'd like to contact the show and maybe tell us, I don't know, your favorite restaurant to get carryout from right now. You know, right now, my favorite restaurant to get carryout is probably California Pizza Kitchen. I am really loving, they've got like a pepperoni sausage mushroom pizza that I'm really liking, but that's just me. So let us know where it is that you might be ordering from. Love to get some ideas. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosports. And I've been telling you this the past few weeks, a lot of quarantine, a lot of people locked up, a lot of people cooped up. Hey, if you want to reach out, maybe you're bored, maybe you want to drop us a line, maybe you have a suggestion for the show, or you have a certain subject that you would like us to talk about on the show, please reach out to us. Sometimes it just helps to reach out, to ask a question, to interact with someone. Hey, bring it. We would love to hear what it is that you have to say, especially now. So make sure you reach it out. Also, remember that we do now place a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube. So be sure that you head over there and subscribe to the Daily Dose on YouTube. Thanks to everyone that's going over there and watching the videos every week. We are putting up just a small portion of the podcast every week. So make sure that you stop by and check that out. Hey, and as long as we're all doing that whole online shopping thing, make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. TeePublic is doing a number of sales every single week, and I've told you this before, we do now have Daily Dose social distancing masks over there too. We were like, you know, when you have to wear a mask, you can't really like smile at people, so we made one that allows you to still smile at people. And you know, a lot of places, they're requiring you to wear those if you're out in public. So stop by TeePublic and get your mask ordered. Plus, TeePublic will donate one medical grade mask to Direct Relief and help some people out over there. And we do have other gear over there. We have our Daily Dose original logo gear. We have our Daily Dose I-Team shirts. We have our Daily Dose Faster Than Domestic Violence shirts over there. Couple of different styles that you can pick. If you want a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie, you can pick a number of different colors over there. TeePublic, like I said, is always running sales. So make sure you stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, and scroll down until you see our logo. Click on that and you're going to find exactly what it is that you need. Hey, today on the show, we do have some sports news to talk, but then we are going to be recapping the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, that has been airing every week on ESPN. It actually finished up this past Sunday, and we wanted to talk about it with someone who understands basketball and just sports in general better than most everyone. Longtime basketball coach Russ McKinstry is going to stop by. I was actually kind of texting Coach Mack during The Last Dance, and we started talking and just saying, man, this has been so much fun. This has been great to have this on during this time. And so I wanted to have Coach Mack come in and share some of the thoughts that he had on The Last Dance and, you know, just on Michael Jordan's career in general. Before we get to Coach Mack, let's get started off in the NBA, where it was announced last month that May 8th would be the earliest day to reopen team practice facilities for NBA player workouts. In doing so, the NBA set rules to allow for safe and controlled environments for players to train that include having no more than four players in the facility at any one time and no head or assistant coaches participating. The league will also prohibit group activities like scrimmages. Well, on Friday, it was announced that the Los Angeles Lakers will reportedly allow voluntary workouts back inside the team facility too, which is interesting because we all know that like most businesses in California are still shut down. Do the Lakers have to wear masks when they work out? Because the rest of LA has to wear masks at work, according to Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti. I mean, why is it that the Lakers get to open up, but there's a lot of poor business owners out there that can't do anything right now? I don't know. It seems a little bit strange to me, but hey, it's all about equality. Right, LeBron?
I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not here to judge how the league handled the situation. I just think that, you know, when you're misinformed or you're not educated about something, you know, you never know the ramifications that can happen.
Yeah, just like China. Speaking of stupidity, let's move over to Major League Baseball, where Tampa Bay Rays pitcher Blake Snell, I mean, this guy is a Cy Young winner. He is a, how's the best way to say this? A clueless moron. Snell says he will not play this season for a reduced salary, especially because the risk of contracting the virus is just not worth it. Snell voiced his opposition to Major League Baseball's reported proposal of a 50-50 revenue split with the players for a virus-shortened season in a video that he posted to social media last week. Here is what Blake Snell had to say, and I'm going to quote this. You all got to understand, man, for me to take a pay cut is not happening because the risk is through the roof. This is what he said on his Twitch channel. It's a shorter season, less pay. No, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me. Like, I'm sorry you guys think differently, but the risk is way higher and the amount of money I'm talking is way lower. Why would I think about doing this? Yeah. Why would you think about playing a shortened season for millions of dollars when you will have every health precaution taken in regards to your well-being? When the average ticket buyer is out working on the front lines for like a fraction of your salary. Yeah, why in the world would you do that? Then we had Philadelphia Philly star Bryce Harper saying that he actually agreed with Snell. Here's the deal. If the risk is too high, then don't play at all. Don't say it's about the money, or else you just seem like a greedy idiot when the rest of the country is working with way more risk for way less money. I would have given you way more respect if you had said there is no amount of money out there that will get me to come back. Not when you say, hey, I don't want to come back because the dollar amount isn't high enough. Okay, here's the thing. Blake Snell, never come back, ever. No one will miss you. And to be honest, no one's really going to miss baseball that much anyways. I don't care what you do. You're a moron. You know, these leagues, the NBA, Major League Baseball, they need to come up with a plan. And they need to come up with a plan fast. The longer that the National Basketball Association waits to do anything as far as restarting the season, the more I start to think it's not going to happen. I know they're saying they want to finish up the season. And in a lot of ways, they kind of need to. You need to have like draft orders and those kind of things. But when they don't do anything and they still have 20 games left in the regular season, and then they still have to figure out some sort of a postseason. I mean, when you think about it, if they restarted right now, they're not getting done until what? Like October? I mean, that's into next season, so I don't have a whole lot of faith there. But then in Major League Baseball, you don't want to wait too long, because then you could possibly have to go up against maybe the NFL or possibly college football. Hey, no one watches baseball anyway. But if you go fully without a season, you might have a repeat of the strike year back in 1994 when they just canceled the season and then we kind of realized, oh yeah, you know what? No one really cares all that much. The NBA and Major League Baseball might want to get a plan together very, very soon. Moving on to some more stupid news that we have. Did you realize that South Korea is already back to playing sports? Their K-League Soccer League is now rolling again. And on Sunday, one of their teams, FC Seoul, I guess, football club Seoul, I don't know. They hosted a game against, I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, Gwangju. That is a game that had been delayed since late February and all this stuff came. Well, fans were banned from attending this game in person on Sunday. But football club Seoul had the idea of placing mannequins in the stands to make it look like there were actually some people in attendance, except for one small problem. A few television viewers had some complaints about the mannequins. It turns out that they weren't actually mannequins. They were sex dolls.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding. The soccer team had purchased a bunch of sex dolls and had to release an apology saying they had meant to order mannequins, but they had mixed up the order and they had received sex dolls instead, so they just went ahead and used those. Man, if I had a dollar for every time that happened. And it's tough to kind of sell the wife on that whole story, isn't it? Look, baby, I was trying to order a mannequin, but you know how confusing Amazon Prime one click is. No, no, no. Don't bring her into this. You leave Brittany out of this. It's not her fault. She didn't do anything. I'll just put her down in the basement. I can't wait to see the sex dolls that other sports leagues order for their empty grandstands. I mean, the NBA is going to have like Spike Lee sex dolls. Major League Baseball will probably have old white men sex dolls. It's going to be creepy. And they all look so surprised all the time. Staying with our news theme today of just blatant stupidity, it seems that the University of Kentucky has a bit of a sports scandal going on.
What?
I know, that's shocking news, right? No, basketball coach John Calipari didn't get busted. At least not yet. No, this is actually concerning their cheerleading program. Because on Monday, Kentucky fired its entire cheerleading coaching staff after an investigation into alleged inappropriate conduct, including hazing, alcohol use, and public nudity on the team. The three-month investigation revealed alleged misconduct at a retreat and other off-campus events, ranging from cheerleaders being encouraged to perform stunts and chants while partially nude, to excessive consumption of alcohol that actually required medical treatment for several cheerleaders. At a team retreat in Lake Cumberland, some cheerleaders were performing gymnastics routines known as basket tosses that including hurling teammates from a dock into the water while they were, wait for it, either topless or bottomless. That is according to this investigation that took place. The routines were performed within the view of at least some of the coaches, according to the investigation. In another incident, at a cheerleading camp in Tennessee, some Kentucky cheerleaders were directed by other members to perform lewd chants and wear outfits that did not include underwear, according to the university. Now, I'm just going to say this. Put aside all of the teenage fantasies that you know young boys, well, and grown men actually have. Hey, this type of thing has no place at a place like the University of Kentucky. This kind of thing, it has no place among these young kids that are just trying to get an education. This is not the kind of thing that the University of Kentucky can condone in any way. These kids are getting caught up into doing things that they absolutely shouldn't be doing, and we can't have that kind of stuff. And yet, can you imagine having the job of trying to make Kentucky football exciting? Like, if you're trying to make that horrendous football program, it's been terrible for years, somewhat entertaining, I hate to say this, but you might have to drink heavily, and you might have to do some topless or even bottomless gymnastics. Hey, that's a tough sell is all I'm saying. Moving over to the NFL, have you noticed a lot of things taking place over there lately? And no, I'm not talking about workouts beginning, although I have heard that NFL complexes are beginning to open up. No, I'm actually talking about the number of players getting in trouble. Buffalo Bills defensive lineman Ed Oliver was arrested over the weekend on charges of driving while intoxicated and unlawfully carrying a weapon. Washington Redskins wide receiver Cody Latimer was arrested early Saturday morning after shots were reportedly fired inside an apartment building. And then we have whatever New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker and Seattle Seahawks cornerback Quentin Dunbar were doing. It sounds like they were involved in like some sort of dumb robbery scheme and it went really, really bad. Anyways, I've got bad news for everyone out there. This is just the beginning. Kids, these NFL players are getting restless. They should be working out and lifting weights and working on their game and burning energy. And right now, they have nowhere to do that. That's a problem because they're not doing like spring practice stuff yet. I mean, think back normally to this time of year anyway. We usually do start to hear in the spring, players start getting in trouble because training camp is still a few months away. But this year, it's even worse. Because with everyone being cooped up, NFL players are like bursting and we're going to hear more about this kind of thing happening. We're going to hear more players getting in trouble. I don't know. I'm kind of getting nervous with all these players out there that haven't been able to work out. They're not being able to go out and play football. They're not being able to go to spring training stuff. I don't know. We might be a little bit scared of all these NFL players out there.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband because they're raping everybody out here.
This is bad news for all of us. One more idiotic story to touch on before we get over to Coach Mack and talk a little bit about The Last Dance. You know, I've been singing the praises of the NFL going ahead with their draft, going ahead with their schedule release, so I suppose I also have to make fun of them at least a little bit here too. The NFL is going to officially amend the Rooney Rule to require more interviews of minority candidates for head coaching and coordinator positions. Reacting to a lack of diversity progress in hiring for those jobs, the league will now require teams to interview at least 2 minority candidates from outside the organization for head coaching openings, and at least 1 minority candidate must be interviewed for a coordinator spot. And no, I'm not making fun of that. Hey, let's make sure teams are doing the right thing. I don't know if they're bypassing qualified candidates. I wouldn't think they are, because if there was an advantage to be gained, I would think that they would be taking it. But I don't have any problem with this. This seems fine. But wait, it's going to get dumber. Because then the NFL also had a proposal on the table that they say that they are going to put on the shelf for now. And I'm assuming that they're going to put it on the shelf for now because they clearly don't have the votes for it to pass. But get this. This proposal would have allowed teams to improve their draft picks if they hired a minority candidate as either a head coach or a general manager. Under the proposal, a team could improve their third round draft selection by up to 16 picks, going up 10 spots for hiring a minority candidate as general manager or an equivalent level position, and then 6 spots for hiring a minority head coach. Now, currently, there are only 2 minority general managers and there are just 4 minority head coaches. That matches a 17-year low, so the NFL wanted to step in and do something. But here's the thing, this isn't the way to do it. I don't really want to discuss all the politics involved here. I mean, let's forget for a moment that hiring someone not on their merits, but based purely on their skin color, it's probably like exactly what you're not supposed to be doing here. But I would like to think about some other possibilities. Do you get a move up in the draft if, say, a team drafts a white cornerback? What if you draft a black place kicker? Or what if you bring in like a Vietnamese quarterback? Do you get a higher pick? There's a lot of options out there is what I'm saying. I'm not sure we want to reward teams for looking purely at race and saying, we're going to hire that person. Okay, then we're going to reward you for it. I thought you were supposed to take the most qualified person. And here's my biggest concern with this whole thing. Here is the thing that everyone should be worried about. You just know that New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick would be signing like a black paraplegic non-binary and getting the top pick in every single draft. That is kind of how that guy rolls. If you can find a way to skirt the rules, you know Bill Belichick is going to find a way. Come on, NFL, be smarter than that. Okay, coming back, we want to take a closer look at that Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, and we are going to bring in a ringer to do so. Russ McKinstry has forgotten more about basketball than most of the rest of us even know, and he is going to be joining us to talk Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls when we get back. Joining us right now, a great friend of the show, a guy that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to have on the dose here and there. He joined us just a few weeks back to discuss overcoming adversity in this weird time. And if you haven't listened to this, you know, encourage you, go back and find that episode. But Russ McKinstry has coached high school basketball in Colorado, in Kansas, in Arizona. He's won over 400 games. He's won state titles. He's sent a number of players off to the collegiate and professional levels. Coach Mack, thank you so much for joining us today. We always enjoy your visits.
Well, thank you, Coach Daly. And it's a beautiful, warm day here in beautiful Colorado. And I couldn't think of anything more fun to do than talk a little Michael Jordan and the Last Dance with you. So looking forward to it.
Coach, before we get to that, and we're going to talk a lot about that, we're starting to hear some positive news if you look in the right places. And instead of, you know, like talking about our feelings, we actually look at some statistics. Coach, do you think we have any chance of getting back to some real sports here soon?
You know, I'm optimistic. I think everything is trending in that direction. You know, I think we'll have to go through a phase where we probably aren't going to be there in person, but at least we'll be able to watch it on TV or your device or whatever. So I'm optimistic about that. And I'm just really hoping that, you know, when we re-socialize, that it goes smoothly and hopefully by maybe, you know, early September, we're back actually going to events, maybe in a modified version, but at least we're back attending live events as well. So I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that way too. And it does sound encouraging. I think there's some ways they can do things if they just do them intelligently. I think we can get back to some real sports, and I would absolutely love that. Coach, we haven't had any live sports to watch, but the next best thing we have had, like you said, is that ESPN Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, which was a 10-part series on the career of Michael Jordan, and it covered a lot of ground. I was glued to it every week. Jordan is such a unique player, such a unique competitor. I loved that this documentary introduced that younger generation to stories that maybe we already knew. Maybe a few that we didn't, but we already knew those stories. But you have to see Jordan's full story, not just like the highlight video of him in a dunk contest. And I thought this series did a pretty good job of painting a more full picture of Jordan's career.
I agree. And you know, even myself, it's been a while. I had forgotten how great Jordan was. So, you know, I really enjoyed just seeing Michael perform again and seeing the beauty and grace and athleticism of his game. You know, I've always considered him to be the greatest and always will. And others like LeBron and Kobe and Magic and Larry and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I mean, they're up there. But no one comes close to Michael Jordan. And to go back and revisit his career, or just brief moments in his career, it really is truly amazing to see the talent level, the mental toughness, the physical toughness. And it was something that, like I told you earlier, I just wish we could continue on with the series and make it a weekly event for the next couple months, because I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I was too, and I didn't want it to end. You know, it's funny because going into the series, we were hearing that, you know, we might see another side to Michael Jordan. Like, we're going to see this competitive side. We're going to see this kind of jerk side to him. We're not going to like him. We might come out of this not liking him as much. Coach, maybe I'm crazy. why do I like him more now? I love seeing what drove him. I love seeing that he was kind of this insane competitor.
Yeah, I mean, he took the principle of staying focused and not playing backwards or not looking ahead to a whole new level as far as athletes are concerned. I mean, his ability to stay in the moment, like they talked about last night's, I think it might have been episode 9, about how he's able to stay present, is something that is just so unique to have that ability, that mental ability. And then you combine, obviously, the physical skills. And I think the only downside, or maybe not downside, but the thing I wish they could have done was maybe spent maybe 2 episodes just on Michael and what he was when he was a junior in high school and how he transformed himself into, you know, Michael Jordan that we know of. The work, the time, every experience that he had to go through as a junior, senior in high school, and then with his time at North Carolina. I think it would have really been awesome for younger kids, high school kids, young college players to see the process that Michael went through to become the player he became eventually with the Chicago Bulls. I think they really would have benefited from that. And if you haven't had the opportunity to really delve into that part of his life, I would encourage people to look into that phase of his life when he was young and developing, and what he did to become so good. And I think most people just kind of chalk it up to, you know, he was just extremely gifted and it just came so easy. But if you really look at what he did when he was a junior, senior in high school, and then freshman, sophomore years in college, the work ethic, the amount of time, the sacrifices that he made become Michael Jordan really will just blow you away.
Coach, I'm glad you brought that up, because when we go back to the beginning of the series and we watch Michael going from high school to North Carolina, we see him learning from Dean Smith. We see him learning from assistant coach at the time, Roy Williams. We see one very underrated aspect to Jordan's game. He was so strong fundamentally because of Dean Smith, because of what he taught at that level. Everything Michael did and did so well had that backbone of fundamentals to it. And I swear, I'm not trying to go all old man, get off my lawn. I'm not trying to do that. But we see so many players today lacking that fundamental base. His footwork, his ball handling, how tight he was with the basketball, just how strong he was with the basketball. That all comes from that Dean Smith stuff. And I'm assuming from his high school stuff too. He must have been taught that as well. He had such a great base of fundamentals though.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the point I was trying to make too, Coach, is that, you know, he was a student of the game, and there are legendary stories about how passionate he was about learning from coaches and wanting to be perfect in his execution of all the little details that play into becoming, you know, a very skilled basketball player. And that's what I really admire about Michael Jordan is, you know, we see the man that he became and the multi-billion, you know, dollar man and, you know, person that owns, you know, the Charlotte Hornets and part of the Miami Marlins. And we kind of focus on that part of it. But I like to focus on the process and the journey he went to reach the point where he is now as a 57-year-old man and extremely successful. What did he do back when he was, you know, 17, 18 years old? And the stories really are really incredible, what he did, because he didn't come from a wealthy family. And there was a combination of numerous sacrifices he made in order to become, you know, someone that that performs at such a high level. It's really inspiring to me.
Coach, I know that the narrative now, and especially among younger people that don't know the story, is that, well, yeah, Jordan and the Bulls were great or whatever, but the Bulls were loaded and he just had a better team than everyone else. People don't realize how bad the Chicago Bulls were when they drafted Jordan. I mean, they were the Arizona Cardinals or like the Cleveland Browns or Sacramento Kings. They were terrible. He built that franchise from nothing and they really haven't been much since, but they were horrible. They were one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that was during, you know, Michael's a year younger than me. So I became a basketball fan when I was about 8 years old, and the Chicago Bulls were just, you know, an afterthought. They'd have a couple of players that, were solid, but overall that the program, the team, the franchise was very low on the totem pole of great franchises and really an afterthought. You know, you really never even talked about the Chicago Bulls until Michael got there. It's amazing how the forces of nature came together with Michael Jordan. And then you had Phil Jackson. And then you started putting some of the pieces around him with Scottie Pippen and Rodman and Steve Kerr and other pieces that went into John Paxson. It was elevated by one man who had the mentality that, he was not going to let himself or others around him fail. And to be that type of person that can transform an entire franchise, the culture, and then transform the city the way he did. And we all agree. I think, you saw there's a price to be had for that too. And that's probably maybe a different question that we can talk, about the price it takes to do that type of thing. But, it really was special to see what Michael Jordan did. And it's obvious that he didn't do it by himself. It took help. But I equate it to, what John Elway did for the Denver Broncos, how he changed the Broncos into a franchise that was respected nationally, but he couldn't get over the hump until he had help to push us to the two Super Bowl victories that we got here in Denver. So you don't see those type of individuals come around very often. They're very, very special.
Coach, the series touched on quite a bit. Early in Jordan's career, he was great. But obviously, like you said, as a team, he just didn't have enough help around him. They couldn't hang with the likes of like the Boston Celtics and then later the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons eventually adopted a style of play, the Jordan rules, extremely physical. They tried to cut off the baseline drive, force him left, double down on him from the top if he's down low. If he goes in the paint, their rule was, don't just foul him. I mean, knock him down, put him on the floor, the harder the better. What did you think of the Detroit Pistons and the Jordan rules as far as how it affected the game of basketball? Because we saw that style of play. We later saw it with the Knicks. It kind of started to creep in at every level a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. In fact, that's about the time that you and me met. We were coaching during the mid-90s, late 90s. And I know the Pistons were late 80s, early 90s, and the Knicks and some of those other thug teams. But really, and you even saw during the entire series, the scores of the games, they were in the 80s, somewhere in the 70s, most were maybe low 90s, but you hardly ever saw anything over 100 during that decade. So defensive aggressiveness, physicality was just part of the game back in the 80s and 90s. I was influenced a lot by coaches who developed that type of mentality. And I used a lot of that mentality. As you know, we used a lot of that mentality in our own programs and the systems we ran, and the idea of making sure that you never let anybody go where they wanted to go. And you chug people and force people to move in a direction opposite of where they wanted to go. And that was just part of the game. So I like the changes that have evolved to make the game more wide open, scoring easier. But for a basketball coach who went through that era, a lot of that type of basketball is also, even though it's ugly, is kind of beautiful to me because it was what we believed in at the time.
Coach, the Bulls go out and they eventually get Phil Jackson. And he completely changed the way they were operating because under Doug Collins, Collins was kind of, let's do whatever, but let's feed everything to Michael. That wasn't what the Bulls did. I mean, Jackson installed the triangle offense. He encouraged Michael to start sharing the ball with his teammates. He was starting to get more help around him. In your opinion, as a coach, what made Phil so great? Because what did he win? 10 rings? I mean, he won a ton. What was it that made Phil so different? Was it the psychology stuff? Was it just purely X's and O's? Did he just know how to deal with people?
I think that last thing you just said probably more than anything, the ability to manage people. And, it's pretty fascinating. And you know the story. You've heard me talk about it before. I had a player, Pat Garrity, who went on and played in the NBA for the Orlando Magic for the majority of his career, but also was drafted by the Bucks and then traded to the Phoenix Suns. And I had this incredible opportunity to go spend 3 or 4 days with Pat when he played for the Suns. And I basically had access to everything that the Suns were doing at that time. And it was almost like a sledgehammer hit me in the head when I went to watch what NBA franchises are like and how they operate behind the scenes. It is so different than what you see at the collegiate and high school level. And it became very obvious. Danny Ainge was the head coach of the Suns at that time. And they had Danny Manning was there, and Cliff Robinson was there, and Jason Kidd was there, and Pat was there, and Tom Gugliotti was there, if you remember that player. And, you know, anyway, they had a nice roster, not a high level roster, but a nice roster. But the way each individual operates at the NBA level, and they're on their own agenda, and they have all these representatives that, you know, the posse that take care of each of their players, just like Jordan had, you know, his security people and his people that represented him. Most, you know, you usually have five or six players that have that type of ability and that type of money. And so to manage the egos and, you know, the desires and what every player wants to have happen, based on their own personal agenda, you have to have someone that is just an incredible person that can, you know, handle those egos and the different variables and scenarios to try and keep everybody on the same page. And I saw that up front personal with Pat, and I was just amazed. And they say it's a player's league. And boy, did I find out right away that the players determine, you know, what's going to take place and when they're going to practice and, you know, when they're going to travel and what's going to be going down with the team as far as meetings. And it was so foreign to me because that's always been the role of the coach and, you know, the upper management. But in the NBA, you know, people like Michael, I mean, they determine, you know, what's going to be taking place with the team. And you have to have a coach that can kind of roll with that type of mentality and manage all those egos. So I really was very impressed with what Phil Jackson was able to do. And you saw Rodman take off numerous times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know what I would have done. I know what you would have done.
Sure.
Rodman would have been kicked off the team and gone, and we would have moved on without even flinching. But Jackson had the wherewithal, the patience, the foresight, the emotional intelligence to roll with that in order to benefit the entire team. And that is just so different than what you see at the collegiate and high school level.
Hey, coming back, we still have a ton to get to with Coach Mack today as we recap The Last Dance. Here's a question that we have. Why was Phil Jackson such a perfect fit as a coach for Michael Jordan? And could Michael Jordan's methods of leadership work with today's players? We still got a lot to cover today on The Dose. Let's go ahead and continue our conversation with Russ McKinstry. We are actually discussing Michael Jordan's favorite head coach, Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson is kind of a weird dude, but like you said, you could tell he understood the idea that, hey, I know we always kind of say this, but not everybody on that team is equal. We're going to have some exceptions for some different people. Coach, I always kind of laugh at this, especially like in the sports media world, because the triangle offense, it's made out to be this like mysterious, like high IQ type of offense. You and I know it's not quite this top secret enigma that it's made out to be. I mean, it's basically like read and react with some set rules and principles, but everybody's like, oh, they ran this triangle and it was so complex. And I'm like, yeah, we ran that in middle school. It's not that complex. It's pretty teachable.
Yeah. And as you know, there are multiple offenses that you can run and they're all very successful. It does make a slight difference based on how the coach, what his knowledge level is and how he's able to teach the offense. But I can guarantee you, if you have the type of high level players like a Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, it really doesn't matter what offense you run. As long as you believe in it and you commit to it, it will be successful. I think that's where coaches run into trouble is, you know, they're always tinkering because they themselves really don't believe in something. But if you get really good players to believe in something and commit to it, you know, I don't really care what kind of offense you want to put in there. It'll work if you have talented and skilled players.
Well, that's just it. If you've got the right people, I mean, he could have went out there and ran anything and they would have been fine. And it helps when you have, you know, Mike, and then Scotty's development was just off the charts. But, you know, Coach, I like that this wasn't just 10 episodes of just great Jordan highlights. We saw some blemishes. We saw Like, Michael had a rough way of leading his teammates. He didn't really do the pats on the backs. He didn't really do the hugs. It was ruthless. It was get on board or get out. But you saw him build these players and then eventually the team. I mean, Scottie Pippen becomes an all-time great. You saw his toughness later in the career with the back injury and he's still playing. But guys like Steve Kerr and Horace Grant, John Paxson, you saw them step up and stand strong. We also know, though, there were like the Rodney McRae's and the Brad Sellers that washed out and they were gone. As a coach, would you have a problem with your leader leading the way that he led?
Great question. You know, and I watched all 10 parts of the series with my wife and even a couple with my sons. And, you know, it was, I'd watch their facial expressions and kind of ask them questions after each, you know, episode. And I think people were probably, you know, even shocked by Michael's behavior towards his teammates and even, you know, with people outside of the organization who, he made a lot of judgment calls on. But I try to remind them and tell them that during that period when Michael was growing up at the same time that I was growing up, and that was just how we were coached. That was just part of our society that, you know, everybody that was in athletics, coaches challenged your manhood. You know, that was something that occurred every day. And, you know, if you showed any sign of weakness, that was a real detriment or negative mark on who you were as an athlete. So we were all trained during the 60s, 70s, 80s to be adverse to any type of negativity, to make sure that coaches could almost mock you with sarcasm because they felt you would respond to that sarcasm. And I could tell that, you know, obviously that was how Michael was coached and what he believed in. And I think what was really, really important, and it was something that I utilized a lot and dealt with when I was first in coaching, was that he would come up with excuses to be very angry at his opponent.
Right.
And to hold a grudge. And that is something that was really a big part of my coaching style when I first started. And it lasted well into my career just because that was how things were done. You learned to hate your opponent. You found ways to make sure you hated your opponent, and you never had any empathy, or you never really did away with any type of grudge match or revenge that you had against your opponent. And that is so different than what we do today. You know, that is just a foreign concept to anybody that's really coached since maybe, you know, 2005 and somewhere in there where that change was made. And I think it's probably a good change, Dales, but it really was interesting to see that hardcore, you know, win at all cost. And I will, you know, not only throw you on the ground, but I'll stomp on your throat and step on you until you have no life left. I mean, that was just something that was ingrained in all of us. But obviously Michael took it and really took it to a new level.
Well, and it also made me kind of wonder if maybe, you know, like we talked about, Phil wasn't the most like aggressive style like that. That wasn't him. But nope. He almost had Jordan to do it for him, so he didn't have to do that. It was like a perfect marriage there, because Phil wasn't going to go say that stuff, but Jordan would do it, and he didn't mind it. I don't know, like you said, I don't think players today could have dealt with that. I don't think in this era, like a Jordan today in that regard, I think players would will. I think they would just go away. They wouldn't know what to do.
Great observation, and I agree. And I think also when you saw Michael become emotional at certain times, you know, with his dad and his dad's situation, but also when he was asked about would he do it again and what would he change and what do you think his teammates thought of him, and you'd see those tears kind of form up. I think that is the softer side of Michael, thinking, man, I was brutal. I took people and put them on my back and we were successful and we won. But I also know that probably they have hard feelings towards me. Probably some of them hate me. And I think that is where you kind of get the idea that maybe Michael is human after all, and not just a robot without a heart and brain. And he has emotions just like all of us do. But man, the tenacity, the persistence, the unwillingness to do anything but your absolute best is to be really commended. But also trying to live up to that standard and that expectation what you saw for yourself when you watched the series. I mean, it can be very, very daunting to people that don't know how to handle that.
Coach, I heard Larry Bird say, and this has been a while back, if you want to have fun, you would want to play with LeBron James. If you want to win, you would want to play with Michael Jordan. And I think there is a lot of truth in that. I also think in this series, a lot of times we've kind of been told, or people, you know, especially, you know, the younger generation, because they just weren't there, they just don't know. We keep hearing that, well, the competition that the Bulls faced, it wasn't quite as good. And I just have to laugh because, like, it's clearly being said by people who weren't watching or not paying attention. I mean, in the finals, he beat Magic's Lakers, and I'll give you that team was banged up. He beat Clyde Drexler's Trailblazers, a much better team than people remember. Charles Barkley was obviously the MVP with the Suns. That was a good team with the Suns. I think that Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Seattle Supersonics team, I think they were really good. I think they were really underrated. Top team coming out of the West. And then Stockton and Malone with the Utah Jazz. But forget the finals. Like, people are forgetting he had to get to the finals first. He had to go through Patrick Ewing and the Knicks. He had to go through Reggie Miller and the Pacers, Shaquille O'Neal and Penny, you know, down with the Orlando Magic. Those are some really, really good teams, as good as, you know, anything we see now.
Yeah, I think it's just reversed from what we see now with the West, Western Conference being loaded now with 1 through 8, 1 through 9, maybe. And back during that era, I think you're right. The Eastern Conference was loaded 1 through 7, 1 through 8. And you're right. Those Knicks teams, those Pacers teams, I mean, they were real. In fact, I mean, they would have went on and won the championships.
Yeah, I think they would have.
If they didn't have to go through Jordan, but, they just couldn't get past Jordan. And that was, it was really a great time for the NBA. And it obviously grew so quickly because of Michael Jordan, that era with Magic and Larry, and how basketball just, you know, worldwide became so successful. It was fun to see, you know, how basketball became so popular during that time. And there were a lot of good teams that were overshadowed by the Bulls and Michael Jordan. But, you know, again, that just, I guess, really is a compliment to those teams for being so good and going through that grind. And Michael, you know, the difference between him and LeBron or any of them, really, in my mind, is, you know, all of them have the ability to turn on and turn off when they needed to. Michael just never turned off. He was always on. I mean, it didn't matter what night, who they played, what the circumstances were. That dude brought it every night. And when you're talking about 82 games plus playoffs plus preseason, to me, that's superhuman. That's an incredible accomplishment for someone to play as hard as he did for that long during the course of the season and to do it multiple years. It just blows me away.
Well, and I also have to look, when we're talking about greatness, when we're talking about, you know, best of all time, I have to look at, well, who did you stop from winning a title and who else got a title kind of on your watch? And so, like, you look at Larry and you look at Magic and they, you know, they had to beat each other, but they stopped a lot of really, really good teams from winning anything on their watch. They had to knock off some of those great teams. Even, you know, Isaiah and the Pistons and that. Jordan stopped some really, really good players from getting rings on his watch. I mean, you kind of feel bad for the Patrick Ewings, the Charles Barkleys, because they were really, really good. They couldn't get a win while he was still playing. Even some of the coaches. I mean, some of the coaches that Jordan beat, the Chuck Daly's, Pat Riley, George Karl. I mean, I know Jerry Sloan might not have been the most inventive offensive coach. Jerry Sloan was really, really good. The fact that Jordan stopped those guys from getting rings when they had the talent to go get the rings, that puts another notch for me on Jordan being probably the best of all time.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right about Jerry Sloan, man. That dude, I think if you ask a lot of people that know basketball, him and Greg Popovich are probably two of the most underrated, brilliant coaches that have ever coached in the NBA. Neither one of them get nearly enough credit for what they've been able to do. Popovich maybe more than Sloan, but Sloan was the real deal. And we know that because we had to face him all the time here in Denver, and it drove us crazy that, you know, he had our number like crazy.
Oh, he just beat us every year.
Yeah. You know, people, I mean, you really never really understand how difficult it is to be number one at the end of a season, you know, to be crowned a champion, and especially in a league as competitive as the NBA. You know, I don't think they ever probably get enough credit for winning that championship, especially when you have to do it over the course of a 7-game series. To be able to pull that off, you know, you need some breaks, you need some luck, but man, there's just a resiliency, there's a toughness factor, there's an ability to overcome fatigue and exhaustion, and you know, all the things that can distract you from doing what you need to do, because people still have to live their lives. They have families, they have things going on in their life besides just basketball, and they're on the road in hotel rooms, and they're in jets and buses, and you know, they're not getting sleep, they're eating different food all the time. I mean, if you really just break it down into what those people go through, and then you really can understand how difficult it is to do it. Plus, you also understand why, you know, Michael decides to retire midway through and try baseball, because the exhaustion, the grind, the, you know, just the weight of the pressure that is put on those athletes, it's just amazing how they deal with it. It just blows me away to watch that process.
Coach, I know, you know, we talked about it earlier. Mike had kind of said prior to the series, afterward, people might not like him. I didn't find him to be the villain, obviously, at all. But there were a few villains in this. I mean, you've got Bulls GM Jerry Krause. You've got Bulls owner Jerry Reinsdorf. You've got, I mean, I hate to say Scottie Pippen at times, you know, with his contract stuff, or, you know, not like refusing to play in the game against the Knicks. You've got crazy Dennis Rodman, the Pistons, Isaiah. Did anybody stand out to you as the bad guy? You always have to have a bad guy in the series. Who's the bad guy in the series?
Yeah, I agree. I like that question too. And I've thought about that. And what I think is that I would paint each of them as a villain, just like all of us. They're just human like the rest of us. And they all had their flaws. They all had their insecurities. They all had their parts of their personality that I looked at and thought, yeah, you know, that's kind of scummy, or that's something that I don't like about you as a person. But then, you know, who am I to judge? And you're not walking in their shoes. And there's always two sides to every story. And initially I thought Jerry Krause was going to be the guy that I would paint as my villain, that right. I thought, man, you know, you just don't get it. But by the end of the series, kind of, you know, when Scottie and Michael were even talking about Krause and kind of summing up the whole experience, even then I realized that no, really, you know, he's just like everybody else. He had a role that he did some really great things. He had a role in doing some really stupid things or unethical things or things that kind of tore that whole team apart. But I think each person, just like all of us, had their failings, made their mistakes. And, I would say that they all also had very positive sides to what they contributed. So I couldn't just put one villain out there and really focus on that one villain, because each of them showed me some things I didn't like about them, but they all showed me some things that I liked about them too.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we need to finish this conversation with Russ McKinstry. We kind of ran out of time, but we still have a lot to cover here. What all did we learn from The Last Dance that maybe we didn't know before? And who completely stole the show? We actually have someone that proved to be really, really valuable to this entire story. Plus, you know we're going to have some breaking sports news. And you know what? We just might have to put together a Michael Jordan Daily Dose Top 5 for you too. So make sure that you stop by and check out The Dose again next week. We will be finishing up this conversation with Russ McKinstry. Hey, stay safe, stay healthy, get in a workout, and get some sleep. Keep your heads up, everybody. I think we're going to get back to some real sports very, very soon. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube and subscribe to our Daily Dose channel. Look for our Daily Dose logo. I will leave links everywhere so that you can make sure you get the correct one. I have to say thank you so much to Russ McKinstry for stopping by and talking about The Last Dance and Michael Jordan's career with us. We always enjoy your visits. I have to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know, whether it's a coworker, maybe a family member, maybe just a friend. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
Had your kids, had your wife, and had your husband, because they raping everybody out here.